Welcome to You Are an IP Company podcast with Carrie Oberbrunner and Katie Rubino. Our passion is helping entrepreneurs publish, protect, and promote their intellectual property. This podcast is sponsored by Instant IP. And now, get ready for You Are an IP Company.
Hey, folks, listen, IP is not just for you, it's for future generations. And you would be shocked to learn that people who position their IP well, whether it's someone creating something, I was shocked to learn that Hello Kitty is a big thing, I guess. Some of the biggest franchises ever are Pokemon, Hello Kitty, Winnie the Pooh, Mickey Mouse and Friends, Star Wars. I don't even know some of these. Mario, you get the point. But certainly, those are all examples of IP, and some of those creators have long passed on. And so if they've done it right, they could get royalties for their generations forever.
That's right. It's interesting how some of these things, Disney, for example, right? That started a long time ago, 100 years ago. And to this day, they still generate whole lot of money off their intellectual property.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And whether it's that, whether it's singers who've passed on, I think of writers. You know, I like a writer, C.S. Lewis, but his work with Narnia gets repositioned into movies. And you got, of course, J.R.R. Tolkien. So, I mean, writers, you have singers, celebrities. In fact, some of these celebrities, that was pretty shocking. You mentioned Elvis, yep. Michael Jackson. I mean, these are the people who, Marilyn Monroe, I mean, just all these people that their own music or work is IP.
Yep. When I think too, it's interesting because when you're maybe putting in place an estate plan, you're thinking about your tangible assets, your house, your cars, right? Investments, things of that nature, but you're maybe not necessarily thinking about your intellectual property. And if you pass on, who do you want?
Not if, but when.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Right. But so I think that's an important distinction. And I think too, that's why this comes up a lot in divorce cases, intellectual property, because it's not necessarily an asset that you think about.
Right.
And so there's a lot of very interesting case law around how you have to divvy that up in a divorce proceeding too.
Wow. That is interesting. So everybody watching this, they might think, well, gee, I'm not Marilyn Monroe or Elvis Presley. I mean, they're huge, but the point is that we said it in the last podcast. If you start protecting your IP, if you wait to start protecting it till you're big, you'll never do it.
That's right.
And I just see that. It's like, it's the old quote, when's the best time to plant a tree? 20 years ago. What's the next best time today? Like, don't let shame and blame, and I wish I would have, stop you from right now saying, you know, who is going to own that asset? And you don't have to just be a writer or an entrepreneur. I mean, these are things that every business, remember yesterday I showed on the screen, it was a slide from our book, 45 different examples of hidden IP.
Yeah.
Right?
Right. And I think it's interesting how a lot of this maybe historical IP becomes inspiration for the next generation of IP. We met this weekend, Carrie and I were at a conference, and we met someone who is using a very famous book.
Oh, yeah.
Where the author has been dead for probably close to...
It was 1950.
And he's going to use that book as inspiration for his own series of books.
That's right.
And so it's really fascinating how these pieces of art and works of art can inspire totally new art and totally new intellectual property. Too.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I just think that, I mean, it's just a true fact in business that if you don't take yourself seriously, I've seen this for years, people are not going to pay for your service. I mean, there's that whole thing. But if you don't take your IP seriously, people aren't going to, you know, buy from you. And you got some golf balls that have Wigan and Dana on, and my son is super excited to get them. But I mean, that's even something, putting your name, your trademark. You see that happen a lot with gifting, you know, corporate gifting, right?
And branding, right? That's how you build up your brand recognition for what it is you're building.
Yeah. And we met another gentleman who had a person from another country try to sue him. Remember that?
Yeah.
Because he's using a phrase, and it was fun to be able to see you help him. And we both kind of just steered him into say, look, you do not need to take that cease and desist letter seriously, because for these reasons, she can't, you know, so you have both sides. You have some people who are like IP overstepping, but I'd say the majority don't take their IP seriously.
That's right.
Yeah.
When I think too, especially with a cease and desist letter, and I think this was maybe his misstep here, he felt he needed to respond and respond right away. And I think it would have been maybe a little bit better if he had just taken a step back and kind of spoken to legal counsel to realize his options.
Right.
And to see if writing back was even fruitful. I think in this situation, it really hurt him more doing that. And when you kind of just fire something off quick, you don't realize too, that could maybe be something that could be used against you later on. Like if I get a weird email or something that is maybe a little bit unsettling, I like to just take, you know, an hour, take 24 hours.
That's good advice.
But just like a step back before I just
emotionally
react. Right. Right. It helps me really kind of think, is this really even worth reacting to?
That's good. That is good. I like that. Yeah. Because in the heat of the moment, you can fire back and then it can just escalate.
It's like, is it really worth escalating?
Right.
And I think in his situation, it wasn't. Mm-hmm. But sometimes too, it's just a fear response.
Yeah.
Like I think he was fearful that if he didn't respond and kind of shut it down, it would still be kind of out there lingering.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. Yeah. The whole weekend was a lot of different IP conversations for sure. And I mean, there's even things that the conference we went to, I don't know if you saw this, but he switched out the podium sign. Did you see that?
No.
So basically the podium said Boston University on it.
Oh, I did see that.
And then he switched it to Book Thinkers. The menu last night had a very nice restaurant, but it had a menu with Book Thinkers menu. And so it's just very important, folks. If you're going to develop a identity, you really need to be thinking of your branding. And the first thing you need to do is, so that you don't get copycats, is protect that IP. Otherwise, you know, people can set up shop and take all your, I mean, let's talk about that for a moment, because everyone thinks it's good for the business. But what, as I've studied IP law and stuff, what I've realized is, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's almost seems like IP is really created many times for the customer as well, so that the customer doesn't get confused.
Right.
And the customer doesn't think they're going to a Book Thinkers conference, and where's Nick, and where's, what the heck, they just took my money. Or, you know, part of it's right with drugs, pharmacy, so that the customer doesn't get confused.
Exactly. Well, and that's the standard of trademarks around, if you can get your trademark registered, is if it's confusingly similar to another mark, because you want consumers to see your branding and recognize that as a certain set of products, yeah. right? So take, for example, Kleenex, tissues, right? Or paper goods, really. If someone else started making something for Kleenex with paper goods, it's going to cause a lot of confusion because sure. consumers are going to think, is this the same Kleenex as yep. the tissues, right? But if there's a Kleenex for, you know, a school name, right?
Yeah.
I think there's a less of a case of that being confusingly
that's
similar.
That's good.
But that's kind of the standard in which we operate.
And your Kleenex analogy, can you hand me the box there?
Yeah.
Because this, thank you. Because this, my friends, is called facial tissue. In other words, Kleenex is one of these examples, as I think we might have chatted about in the past, but it's the it borders on the generic side.
Yes.
You know,
it's become a generic term.
Yeah. And so there's a term in IP law, genericide, where you think, as a kid, I thought, oh, that'd be really cool to be so brand dominant that, you know, can I Xerox something or Kleenex or, you know, all these terms that have become aspirin, they become associated with the product instead of the brand.
Yep.
But that's actually a bad thing.
Right.
Because then if that happens, then you can lose your trademark.
That's right. Exactly.
Yeah. So that's quite interesting, folks, is that, you know, you can get to that point where you become so dominant that, you know, like what we should instant IP that.
Right.
You know?
Yep.
That would be cool, you know, if instant IP was known as the only thing, but it's not good.
Over time, right?
Yeah. So it is this dangerous tool where you do want domination, but not too much. So I think this is fantastic. And I just want to encourage people how to make your IP outlive you and fund future generations. The first step is you have to know what you have.
That's right.
Right. And that's kind of what we did when we created the IP holding company. I had to go back and look at every domain name, every smart contract, every trademark, every copyright, every patent. But now that we have that, we put it all in my will or trust, I guess you'd say. And now the trust owns that.
Mm-hmm.
So you think like Elvis and all them, they might have done something similar. Should have, right?
Possibly. Elvis, I don't know.
Yeah, he might have been on drugs.
Right. In such a like unexpected
right.
death.
But smart people.
Right. If yeah. you're kind of, you know, estate planning and going through your
yeah.
assets, it's
yeah.
something to definitely consider and put into an estate plan.
Well, you even said yesterday, the Rhode Island example of the mansions. Remember that?
Yeah.
You're explaining a certain, what was it, where in Rhode Island?
Newport.
But you said Newport has these mansions, and I was asking, well, who owns them? You know, but you said that the wealthy families, the Vanderbilts and stuff.
Yep, gave it to yeah. the Historical Society.
Yeah.
And that's what allows the public to now
yeah.
go and tour them.
Yeah, and so whether it's that, whether it's this place, I can't remember, the Wilmot, what is it, North Carolina? I forget, there's something out there. There's something out there. But yeah, you get these big mansions or museums, or but they had to think positively of the family's money and take their IP seriously. And it's donated in the IP of the family.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And I think too, there's probably, you know, tax benefits of setting something up like that. So that's something I would talk to an accountant
yeah.
or a tax attorney about as to how you could structure that.
It's fantastic.
To get advantages there.
Good. Well, folks, I would say, you know, I'm still in my 40s and I started that whole IP holding company in my 40s. And I think it's smart planning. You know, don't just thinking about giving your kids or your inheritance financially, but also intellectual property.
That's right.
Smart move.
Yeah.
All right. Well, go make it happen. If you need help, Wigan and Dana is a fantastic place. Also, Instant IP is a great place to get started. And check out the book, You Are an IP Company, and let us know if you have any questions. We'll help you out. Take care.
Thank you for listening to You Are an IP Company podcast. with Carrie Oberbrunner and Katie Rubino. Visit instantip.today for more help on your IP journey. Remember, your ideas are valuable. Protect them today.